Tonight, we're going to finish our discussion concerning the subject of abortion and legal murder. This morning, we gave all the statistics and definitions as we find them in our culture and in our country, and it continues to be an issue that has divided our country for many, many years. It has become a political football that's passed around every election year, and we're going to hear a lot about it during the upcoming election of 2012, during this election season. But as we looked at this morning, we understand that it is nothing more than taking of innocent blood. And it's a scourge to our nation. And as I left you off this morning, that our hands are stained with blood, the blood of innocent children who are aborted simply as a matter of convenience in the highest percentage of cases. Tonight, we want to look to the Bible to see what the Bible says about life and about life when life begins. This has always been the middle of the discussion. This is always where it ends up being the debate. When is the beginning of life? When does it begin? When does God say it begins? And when is that life something that should be cherished, treasured, and protected? We begin with the passage that we looked at in closing this morning in Psalms chapter 139 and verse 15 and 16. Here the psalmist wrote, "My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they were all written, the days fashioned for me, and when as yet there were none of them." I want you to notice this last part. "And in your book they were all written, the days fashioned for me, when as yet there were none of them." Before you ever lived to a day that you were physically on this earth when you were born, God was already aware of you. God was already aware that your life existed. Before you were named, before you were born, before you came into this world, when you were formed, God began to know you. That gives us an insight to when life begins. Look at Isaiah chapter 44 and verse number 2. Isaiah chapter 44 and verse number 2. Isaiah wrote, "Thus saith the Lord, who made you and formed you from the womb, who will help you. Fear not, O Jacob, my servant, and you, Jeshurun, whom I have chosen." Notice in the beginning of Isaiah's statement, "Thus the Lord who made you and formed you from the womb." From the time that the life is in the womb, it is a life that belongs to God. Isaiah will go on to say in his letter, in verse number 24, "Thus saith the Lord, your Redeemer, and he who formed you from the womb, I am the Lord who makes all things, who stretches out the heavens all alone, who spreads abroad the earth of myself." I want you to understand that the Lord who formed man, it is God who determined the natural procreation of life. It is God who set that in motion. It is God who put that and made it possible that we could reproduce in the species between male and female, and that is the way that life begins, between a man and a woman, and what they produce is a life. It's not a fetus. It's not something to be discarded. It is a life. It is something that's living and vibrant, and it's important to God, and it is something that God recognizes in the womb. In Jeremiah, in his letter, he made the statement in the first chapter of his prophecy, in verse number 4, in verse 5, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you. I ordained you as a prophet to the nations." Notice, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you. Now that tells us again that life begins before the actual birth of a child. That in the womb, that is a life. That is a real person. And God recognizes it as such. Job would make the statement in Job chapter 31 and in verse number 15, "Did not he who made me in the womb make them? Did not the same one fashion us in the womb? God is the giver of life. God is the sustainer of life. God is the redeemer of life. And all life begins because God made it possible, because God made it so. Job would also say in chapter 10, in verse number 18, why then have you brought me out of the womb? Oh, but I had perished, and no eye had seen me. This is one of the difficulties that Job had in understanding of all the difficulties he was going through, that it would have been better had he not been born. Had he never saw the light of day, had he never come out of the womb, had, if he had died at birth, if he had been born stillborn, that he would have never had to endure all the struggles and difficulties that he endured later in life. And again, I guess as I told you this morning in closing, that is the only silver lining of this whole discussion, is where that aborted child is. He's in a safe place with the Lord. He's in a place of peace and total rest, something that he richly deserved but was robbed of in the life here on earth. In Psalms 127, there's a passage that tells us the preciousness of children. In Psalms 127 and verse number 3, life is a gift of God. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. The Bible tells us that children are a heritage. They are a blessing from God. How can one destroy a blessing of God? How can one willfully take a blessing from God, something that's a heritage that God has given man, and how can he destroy it without any afterthought, without giving one regard for that life and for the blessing that came from God? Yes, I've heard the debate all my life. It's my body. It's my life. I determine what I do with it. You would not have your body if it were not for God. If it were not for God, you would not have life. If it were not for God, you would not be able to live on this earth. You would not be able to breathe. And you would not have the capacity to be able to bear children. That is a gift of God. And with that gift comes great responsibility. Another thing that the abortionist forgets about is that he may get the majority of people in this life to go along with his thinking. And he may get the majority of society to think that abortion is nothing matter more than a matter of choice. But I want you to understand tonight that that person is under the judgment of God. And that's a serious matter, ladies and gentlemen. If I'm going to give an account for my actions, and you will, in every detail of your life, and if you abort a child, that is something you're going to answer for. That is something that you are under judgment of God of willfully taking a life. Now, that's something the abortion people don't tell the people who come to get an abortion. As I told you this morning, they don't tell you about what happens afterwards. They don't tell you about the guilt. They don't tell you about the searing of your conscience and the heartache that follows you for the rest of your life when it comes to your understanding that you terminated a life. That you terminated something that was living and vibrant, something that came to you from God, and you terminated because it was an inconvenience in your life. Brethren, don't tell me that God will not reckon with that person. Look at Exodus chapter 21. Remember what I told you this morning about the old law? Well, here is where I got that. In Exodus 21, verse 22 and 23, if men fight and hurt a woman with child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet no harm follows, he shall surely be punished according as a woman's husband imposes on him. And he shall pay as the judges determine. But if any harm follows, then you shall give life for life. Now you let that burn in, that last part. If any harm comes to that life that's in that womb, God says you will give life for life. Brethren, if that statement does not mean that God recognizes that life in the womb as a life, then I don't understand what that verse means. God says that's a life. And if you take that life, your life will be the punishment. That will be the reckoning. And so it demonstrates that God recognizes it as a life. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if God recognizes it as a life, how can we recognize it any less than that? In 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1 through 2. I want you to think about this for a moment. I never really thought about this much until I was putting this lesson together. But then I kept reading this passage and it kept hitting me. But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, and unholy. In the book of Romans, it talks about those who do not have natural affection. What does that mean, without natural affection? Isn't it natural for a mother to love her child? Isn't that a natural reaction or a natural disposition of a mother to love her child? Well, when I look at that passage, and then I continue in verse 3 and 4, it says unloving. And unloving means without natural affection. It is unnatural for a mother to put to death a child. That is unnatural. God made us to love life. Don't we do everything in our power to live as long as we can? Don't we cling to life stubbornly and something that we don't want to lose? And isn't it a natural reaction and a natural order that a mother would love a child? But how could a mother truly love a child if she thinks no more than to discard it in one of the six ways that we described this morning that has anything but inhumane written all over it, and yet do it without giving it a thought? Without even giving it a thought. Brethren, that's unloving. That's without natural affection. It does something to you. Ladies and gentlemen, I talked to too many women who have had abortion, and it's what happens afterward that they have to live with that they can't fix. You can't fix this if you make a mistake. If you make a mistake and you do the wrong thing, you not only kill a child, you do something that you cannot repair. Now, you can be forgiven. You can be forgiven and you can live a productive life and you can do the right thing and you can have more children, but you'll never be able to bring that life back. Now, brethren, God will forgive you. But it's the part that you have to forgive yourself that's pretty tough. That's the part that's difficult. And that's the part that nobody tells you. Nobody tells them that. And therefore, they are without natural affection. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not a fetus. It's a life. It's a child. It's a baby. How much do we love little children? How much joy do they bring into our lives? How much joy do they bring into the society that we live in? Is there anything in life more precious than a child? If there is, I don't know what it is. The life of a child is a precious thing. Something that is a miracle of life. Something that is a gift directly from God's hand. How in the world could we treat it in such a shabby way and in a way that we ought to be ashamed? But I guess of all the things in my country that I'm most ashamed of, it is the attitude that my nation has about this. They have no shame. They have no conscience. How in the world could one try to defend such a practice? How could they do it? How could they do it knowing what transpires when that life is terminated? How can they do it? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But you know what? There's an underlying problem in why this plagues our society. And I want to give you an insight to what it is. Can a woman forget her nursing child and not have compassion on the son of her womb? Surely they may forget, yet will I not forget you. Now, you know what? You can forget about that child. You can just erase it as an inconvenience in your life. And you can do it very easily and you can do it without any conscience. But I want you to know and I want every person to understand that that's something God does not forget. Now that doesn't mean he doesn't forgive it. Doesn't mean you can't repent of it. But it's something that you're going to have to take care of because it's a sin. It is a transgression of his law. It is a sin, and that sin unrepented of will cost you your soul. Now, brethren, it doesn't make any difference what society says about it. It doesn't make any difference if Roe versus Wade becomes a constitutional amendment. It doesn't matter if the majority of our country sees no problem in this process. God will never change his mind. God is never going to change his approach or his attitude about life in the womb. It's always going to be life. It's always going to be something man should hold precious. It's always a gift of God. And when it is terminated, somebody has responsibility. Somebody has responsibility. And somebody's going to give an account. In Psalms chapter 106, verse 37 and 38, this is talking again about mowing. They even sacrificed their sons and their daughters to demons. They shed innocent blood, the blood of their sons and of their daughters, whom they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan, and the land was polluted with blood. Again, I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, how in the world do we not have blood on our hands? Nobody's going to tell me that, who could say that the child isn't innocent? The child's the innocent victim. You know, we talk about victimless crime. This is not a victimless crime. There's a victim. The victim is the child. The child is the victim in this process. And as that victim, somebody is accountable. Somebody is accountable for that action. Not just the doctor who performs the procedure, but the mother and father who brought that child into existence. Somebody's going to have to answer to God for that. And it is a scourge on our nation. 50 million abortions since 1973. More abortions and deaths that have occurred in the womb than every war that we have ever fought in. All the wars, I gave you this statistic this morning, all the wars up to the Afghan and the Iraq war right now, and all the men and women who sacrificed the ultimate in their life, we have lost 1,300,000 men and women in wars. We abort that many babies in a year. In a year. It's mind-boggling. It is mind-boggling to me that we don't have a conscience as a nation about this. It is mind-boggling to me. But I hear debates about saving trees, saving the whales, saving the seals, protecting the wildlife in Alaska, not drilling the environmental difficulties and protecting the land. Brother, where are our priorities? What about life? What about protecting life? Shouldn't that be something that takes top priority in our lives? Isn't that something that should take precedence in our nation? That we protect life? But when we protect animals and environment ahead of a life, our priorities are in the wrong place. Brethren, it's not a political issue. It's not about being an environmentalist. It's not about being an animal lover. It's about what's right and what's wrong. Where's our priorities in this nation? I'm all against the inhuman treatment of animals. I don't think that should be done. And I think you should try to protect the environment. And I think you ought to try to protect our land. And and with the ability that we have now and the knowledge that we have, we could take the things in the ground that we need for our natural resources, and then we can put the ground back in the same way that it was when we took it out. I'm all for that. I don't have any problem with that. But ladies and gentlemen, I think life takes priority over that. I think the life of a child takes priority over any of that stuff. But it doesn't in our society today. And you know what that tells me, ladies and gentlemen? Listen to me very carefully. You know what that tells me? We got our values upside down. This world is going to be burned out. This world's going up in smoke, folks. It's not going to last forever. God never intended for it to last forever. It's going to last as long as He determines that it will last. And it will last for the sole function of us living on it as long as He allows us to live. But when He determines that's over, the world is not going to be saved. It's going to be the life that lived in the world. It's not going to be the seals and the animals and the trees and the environment that's going to survive. It's going to be life that survives. And so life should be precious. And I'm afraid in our country it is not. Today, millions of sons and daughters are being sacrificed to the idols of humanism, selfishness, and greed. And our nation is polluted with blood, whether we like it or not. That's a fact. We have our hands with blood all over them. And it is our great sin. I told you this morning, I'm proud to be an American, but I'm not very proud of our record on this subject. I'm abhorred by it. I'm ashamed of it. It cuts me to the heart of how inhumane and how unfeeling and unloving a nation could be that would allow 1.3 billion abortions a year and yet not have a ring of conscience about it and make it a political issue when it has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with life. Well, how do you deal with it? How do you deal with abortion? Well, you get out there on the picket line. That's your freedom. You can get out there and picket. Many people do. Guilt and depression or a sear conscience. You can go either way. That's your choice. But you know, there is an alternative. Why don't we ever talk about the alternative? Is there an alternative to abortion? Yes. And it's a good alternative. What's the alternative? Here's the alternative. The Evan B. Donaldson Adoption Institute tells us that the number of infants available for private adoption in the United States has been decreasing every year. The factors which have contributed to this change are increased access to contraception products, changed social attitudes about unmarried parenting, and the big one, the legalization of abortion. You know why there is such an empty and a distant number of people who want children and cannot have children and want to adopt it? And the gap is very wide. You know why? Because we've legalized murder. That's why it's wide. That's why it's broad. Because we could satisfy every one of these abortions. 1.3 million a year, we could find homes to put those children in. Parents that cannot have children. Parents that want children so badly and want to adopt, and we are decreasing their opportunity because we've legalized a way to get around it. Now, brethren, I believe this is the better alternative. Between 1989 and 1995, 1.7 of children born to never married white women were placed for adoption, compared to 19.3 in 1973. Now, brethren, you look at those statistics. 19.3 before Roe versus Wade, 1.7 today. Tell me there's not a correlation. Tell me there isn't a reason in that kind of drop. Are there less parents that want children today than in 1973? No, there's more. There's not less, there's more. And yet the percentage is down. In 1970, 89,200 new adopted parents. In 1975, the last year for which such data is available, that number was cut in half to almost 47,000. 50%. The reason for the decline was due to the fact that few U.S.-born white infants were available for adoption. Why? Ask yourself why. Why? I'll tell you, there's a better alternative. Isn't that a pretty baby? Hey, I'm biased, I admit it. Only 2 to 3% of more than 1 million teenagers who become pregnant this year will place their children up for adoption. Now, I want you to think about that. 2 to 3% of all unwed teenage mothers will put their children up for adoption. I was born May 2nd, 1954, to parents who were young. My mom was 17 years old and having difficulty just making ends meet with my father. And it was an unplanned pregnancy. What if abortion had been legal then? I might not be here. You ever think about that? You know, I want to say something that I don't want to be misunderstood. I admire. I don't condone the sin that caused an unmarried person to have a child, but I condone the mother who chose the alternative other than taking the easy route out. You know, that's just a sin. You make a mistake, that's a sin. You can recover from that. But those who did have committed the sin, they don't make a worse sin. They don't make the problem worse. They took their responsibility and took the child and raised it. You ought to be commended. That's exactly what God intended for you to do. And you're a living example and testimony that there is a better alternative than taking the easy route out. I'm going to tell you a true story. Somebody very close to me, somebody that I love a great deal, was faced with this very decision 14 years ago. Her mother and her grandfather told her to get an abortion. She said, no. I made the mistake. I'm not going to let the child pay for my mistake. I'm forever grateful. He's one of my grandsons. Brethren, I know it happens. Anybody can make a mistake. But brethren, abortion isn't the answer. And what I would tell you young girls, don't let yourself get in this decision. There's a way to present that this never you have to make a decision like this. Wait until you're married. That's my advice. Too much heartache. Too much pain. And one other thing. When you have a child, it will forever change your life. It's no longer just about you anymore. You have a life. You have a child. You have a responsibility. You have a duty. You have a great and awesome responsibility that is very, very demanding. And it is very important. And God will help you do what you need to do if you do the right thing. Brethren, I don't know how to change the attitude that I see in our nation that takes life in such a frivolous way. But I know one thing that I know above everything else, that you can only throw it in the face of God for so long until God's going to have an answer for the things that we determined to do as a nation. Now, brother, if you don't believe me, read the Bible. Read biblical history. There's not a nation on this earth that ever threw up God's law and did things their way and thumbed their nose at His laws that they didn't pay a very high price for ignoring and rejecting the laws that He put in place. Now, brethren, I know it's 20 centuries later. But I'm telling you, God hasn't changed His attitude about this. The day of reckoning is coming. Now, I remember in 9/11, Jerry Falwell created a firestorm, as Mr. Falwell many times did. But he got on the Pat Robertson show and he said, and I quote, God is paying us back with retribution for our ungodly attack on the womb and for the killing of innocent children and discarding His law on marriage between a man and a woman. To change His law that He put in motion when He created man, what He put on this earth, the day of reckoning has come. God is letting us sow the whirlwind. You remember what Hosea said? You sow the wind, you reap the whirlwind. Now I'm not sure, and none of us can be sure for at any cost, because God didn't bring those towers down. An extremist religious group brought those towers down. But it happened. And I don't know the reason that it happened. And I don't know the reason that 3,000 innocent lives were taken. That was a horrendous thing. It's a day we'll never forget. But ladies and gentlemen, there is a worse thing happening every day in our country. That's 10 times more travesty than what happened on September 11th, 2001. 3,700 children are being put to death every day in our country. 3,700 children per day. 1.3 million a year. How high will God let the number go? I don't know the answer to that. But you know, I'm glad I'm not God. Because as you could tell in this sermon, my patience would have been worn out a long time ago. But I'm not God. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to not be ashamed that we oppose abortion. That we stand against it. That we believe it's inhumane. That we believe it's legalized murder. And we believe it's a transgression of the law of God and of the loss of a life that God counts as precious and God counts as being important. And we, as individuals, should never, ever, to the best of our ability, uphold men or women who want to take us down this road to make this a permanent amendment on our Constitution that any woman could go into any abortion clinic and without parental consent could get an abortion up to 8 months in a pregnancy. Brethren, we cannot remain silent on this issue. It's not political. It's not about being a Democrat or Republican. It's about being a Christian, being a child of God, and standing for what we know to be right. There are two issues that should be a litmus test to every one of us who wear God's name. One is abortion, and the other is homosexual marriage. Both of these things, we are in the minority today. Do you understand that? We are in the minority. We are in the minority position. Did you ever think it would happen? Did you ever imagine, some of you that are older, some of you that are much older, did you ever think the day would come when we would live in a nation that had such disregard for human life and would believe that marriage is honorable between the same sex? Did you ever think that it would ever come about? I didn't. I was born in 54. I didn't think that. But we're here. That's where we're at. And the only way that you can change it is you change it one person at a time. I go and listen to the candidates. And if I have the opportunity, I go talk to them. And I guarantee you there's two questions I ask them. What's your position on abortion? And what's your position on same-sex marriage? Sometimes they try to skirt the issue. That won't work. You're either for it or you're against it. One or the other. Brethren, abortion is legalized murder, plain and simple. It must be opposed, must be rejected, and we must stand for what is right because we're children of God. and because that's the right thing to do. I want to thank you for your kind attention. I know this is not a very pleasant subject, but it's one that I feel very passionately about because it's something that I believe our nation is headed for a disaster if it doesn't change its course. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, we don't want to end our service without giving you an opportunity to make your life right with God, either by rendering obedience to the gospel or by making your life right. If you found yourself out of duty and found yourself and fallen back into sin, you need us to pray with you and for you. We want to give you that opportunity to do that. But before we sing the song, I want to make one other thing perfectly clear. I don't hate the person who gets an abortion. I don't hate the person that performs the abortion. I hate the sin. I hate the act. Because that's what's wrong. The person that does it, the person that performs it, they're going to answer to God. That's between them and God. But I hate the sin. The sin is what my righteous indignation is pointing to. That's what must be changed. The attitude that permeates our country needs to change for the betterment, not only of our nation, but for our nation as a whole, that we might be looked at differently. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation, we bid you to come forward as together we stand, as we sing.